What we want to do in this series is just say, hey, what does it look like if hurry is the great enemy of the spiritual life in our day? What does it look like to live at a pace and with, this should be on the screen. What does it look like to live at a pace and with a purpose that reveals that we trust that God is God and that we are not? When we trust that God is God, that means that we don't necessarily have to hurry to do all things. Our lives aren't even ours. They're not even, all things aren't dependent on us. We don't have to be in control of everything. We don't have to hurry about it. And so what we've been doing is looking at these different practices that God's given us to live at a sacred pace, to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. And so today we're going to look at this idea of silence and solitude. Again, as Frank read, it's going to be from Mark chapter 1, verse 35 to 39. It's on page 928 of the Bibles that are around the seats. And so today we're gonna look at the problem. Like, what is this problem? What is this hurry? We're going to look at the practice, this practice of solitude and silence. And then the path. How do you actually put this into practice? Because what we looked at last week as well is that hurry, it has underlying issues. Like, there's a reason we feel hurried. There's a reason that we are hurried. Last week we looked at an underlying issue is desires. That we set our desires, we set our affections on things that will never satisfy us. And so we're hurried, try to accomplish this or attain this. And then we said that God gave us a day to just stop. A Sabbath day to stop and rest. And say, like, hey, I'm not putting my desire in things that can't satisfy. And so there's an underlying issue. And there is an underlying issue that we're going to see today to hurry as well. It's noise. The problem in our culture is noise. External noise and then internal noise. I remember listening to a podcast a few years ago, and there's a teacher named Richard Foster. He has a book called Celebration of Disciplines. And what he said is things like scripture memorization and contemplation and prayer didn't used to be an issue. We had like an agrarian culture. We had an agrarian society. And so like whatever percentage of the United States like worked on a farm. So guess what you did? You like were out in a field by yourself all day, right? So you would, you know, or there was no electricity, right? And so people like, you can read some older books of like, oh, you should pray like this guy. He woke up at 4 a.m. and he went to bed at 7 just so he could pray. It's like, no, he woke up at 4 a.m. because the sun was up, and that's what you did. You woke up and you worked when the sun was up. So like that's what you woke up in and you prayed and you did these things. But we lived in an agrarian society. And so like things like contemplation and prayer and reading scripture, like that's what you had time for. We don't live in an agrarian culture, right? We live in a very fast pace. We live in a very hurried. There is a lot of things that create noise. Our culture is very challenging to these biblical ideas of contemplation, of prayer. We live in a very noisy culture. There's input everywhere. Even I get a little nervous, like, so when our service ends, I'm like, hey, turn some music on. It's a little too quiet in here, right? Like, that's what it is before the service. Like, because we don't do well with silence. Like some of you guys are like, all right, I hope he just keeps talking so then it doesn't get awkwardly silent for like too long. Right? I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do this. And it's everywhere. We have noise input everywhere. Like, think about it. I was actually grabbing lunch with Jared on Friday, and we walked in and just kind of getting caught up, and I was talking about the series, like, what are you working on? I was like, I was working on the sermon for Sunday. And I was like, and one of the ideas is that there's just sort of noise everywhere. And he's like, literally, like, what? Like, there was 84 TVs going on, like, on all different channels, right? And then there's, like, music playing on behind the TVs that had nothing to do with the TVs. And then there's just people everywhere. And it was just, like, noise and stimulation everywhere. It's constant, right? You got kids, like, they can't sit still for like 2 minutes. They're like, give me a device, right? They can't do it. When you sit in the car, what do? What's the first thing you do in your car? Turn on the radio. Like, even before we live in Florida, we turn on the radio before the AC. There's something wrong with this. I was talking to Jeff earlier this week, and I was asking him, like, hey, where are some podcasts you listen to? And so he gave me some, and like, for the next, I had to drive down to Del Rey and back. So instead of sitting in my car quietly, like contemplating stuff, like I listened to these awesome podcasts that Jeff suggested, right? So I had more input. There's different studies that show that we see somewhere between 4,000 and 10,000 ads every day that flash across our screens that are there when we're driving around. And someone's like, hey, that's a little high. I'm like, no, like it's somewhere around there that there's just noise everywhere. Right? And I haven't even gotten to this yet. What's the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning? You grab your phone. Guess what it is? Noise. And it immediately comes up. You look at your email or your social media feeds or whatever, and then all of a sudden you look, hey, what's my to-do list for today? So we're starting our day with noise, with things that we feel like we have to do. It leads to hurry. What's the last thing we do before we go to bed? Oh, let me check the scores real quick. Let me pick this back up. And then what? And we're like, oh, we can't sleep. I'm like, yeah, no kidding, right? Our minds are going 100 miles an hour. All the stuff that we're supposed to be doing, it's just everywhere. There was a study done by Microsoft, and it's this question. The question was this: when nothing is occupying my attention, the first thing I do is reach for my phone. 77% of young adults, and I don't think they're alone in this, said yes. So 3/4 of people, I can't sit still without just grabbing my phone. Like I'm not necessarily a young adult. I don't know. Depends on what's the number. Like, but that's what I do. If I'm sitting there and I'm just like, oh, got to go to the bathroom. Where's the phone? Right. There's that idea. We just go after it. There's an article from the talking about the tech industry. And in it, it says the tech industry is the largest, most standardized and most centralized form of, I love this word, of attentional control in human history. We don't necessarily think about this. Like nobody thinks about it. You just think it's a phone, right? But I like the phrasing of that. They say like attentional control. We end up being controlled by this. It ends up creating noise in our lives. And so that's just external noise. And the reason we have so much external noise is, you know what we're trying to do? Shut up all the internal noise, right? We're trying to quiet the internal, as John Mark Comer says, the mental chatter that never shuts up. Right? The pressure, maybe of school, the pressure of work, the pressure of family, the pressure of whatever. The loneliness that we all, you know, when you start feeling like you're by yourself, you're like, you feel lonely, what do? Well, I'm not lonely when I'm on Facebook. I'm here with my 800 of my closest friends, right? It's loneliness, the anxiousness and anxiety that we feel, the shame that comes up from our stories, our past, maybe something that we said or did earlier that day, right? The condemnation we feel for falling short or maybe how we treated somebody, right? It's this external noise as we're trying to quiet this internal noise. This is a huge issue. It's not just like a Christian thing. Of these podcasts, one of them is Nike Trained. It was interesting. I listened to that probably 3 of the 4. This is on like on training and exercise and things like that. 3 of the 4 issue of the. See, I listened to 4 of them. All talked about mental clarity. Right? You may have heard of this as mindfulness. It's like it's a huge industry. It's a huge area. You heard of an app called Headspace? These mind, you guys might, we, everybody that's under 30 is like, yeah, I know what you're talking about, right? See, that's, it's what it is. It is, it's a huge industry now, and it's a huge app, and basically what it is, it's contemplation and prayer without Jesus. Like, that's what it is. Like, Christianity has had this for 2,000 years. It's had it from the beginning, this need for contemplation and prayer. LeBron James was talking about it. He's like, hey, what's the key to your physical health? He's like, sleep. And mental rest. And he's like, I have these mindfulness practices that I do every morning. It's an issue with our culture. And people are like, hey, how do we fix it? How do we drown out the noise? John Mark Comer in the book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, put it this way. He says, the new normal of hurried digital distraction is robbing us of the ability to be present. I mean, like elbowing your like spouse or buddy, like, yeah, that. Present to God, present to other people, present to all that is good and beautiful and true in our world. Even present to our own souls. The noise of the modern world makes us deaf to the voice of God. And look at this, drowning out the one input we need the most. When there's constant noise, we can't hear the voice, the truth of the one that matters most. Jesus put it this way in Mark chapter 8. He said, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world, to hurry around, to accomplish, to know, to learn, yet forfeit his soul? Our culture, our society is just filled with ideas and values and pressures about success and happiness to live at this frantic pace of life. Okay, so this is sort of the problem. This is the world that we find ourselves in. Hopefully you can relate to some of that. Like, yes, that's my experience, or that's what I see as I try and navigate this. So what does it look like to combat it? What does it look like to unhurry, to silence the noise? As we said last week, God gave us a day to not be hurried. He's like, hey, here's a gift, here's a day. You know what he gives us this time? Silence. Being alone. What's the answer for some of the noise of our world and the hurriedness of the world? Silence. Turn it off. Get away from people. These things sound really appealing, don't they? And so he gives us this practice of silence, of solitude. John Ortberg, in his book, he put it this way. He said, solitude is the one place where we can gain freedom from the forces of society that will otherwise relentlessly mold us. So if everything around us is hurried, if everything around us is trying to get us to do something, because that's what advertising and marketing is, correct? If all those things are relentlessly molding us, like, how do we combat it? How do we stop it? How do we live in the midst of it? Because it's not going to stop, right? It works. Like, I clicked on some golf club that I went to like 3 months ago. You know what comes up on my Facebook feed every time? Golf club I want. Like, oh, look at that. It's even cheaper now. Right? It seeks us out. But Jesus gives us this practice of solitude, of silence. Look at verse 35 in Mark chapter 1. So, before I read it, don't think that like, oh look, we're really busy now. Jesus wasn't very busy. One, he's God. Okay? And then if you read the rest of Mark chapter 1, he was a busy dude. He went all day. Right, he went and called his first disciples. He heals all these people. He's doing this teaching. He's running and gunning. He's busy. He's there. Right, he's exhausted. But what does it say in verse 35? After all that, and it says, and rising very early in the morning, while it was still dark, he departed and went out to a desolate place, and there he prayed. So it's in the midst of the busyness, in the midst of the noise, in the midst of the pressure, in the midst of all the things that are vying for our attention, what does Jesus do? He stops. He goes to where it's silent. He goes to be alone with the Father. And the word for that desolate place, it's eremos. It's a Greek word, and it means desert. It means deserted place. It means wilderness. In chapter 1, it says that Jesus, maybe you've heard the story, that Jesus went out into the wilderness and was tempted by Satan for 40 days, correct? You guys, if you know that story, it's this wilderness. He was by himself. It means, it's bigger than that, though. It means desolate place or lonely place. Jesus went out to a desolate place. It also means a solitary place, a quiet place. And so God gives us this practice of quiet, of solitude, of being alone with Him. It's this eremos, this quiet place. And so how do we shut off the noise? How do we live in the midst of all the noise? We need times of silence and solitude. And so silence is just, it means quiet. What did it do? It was early, it was dark, there was nobody else around. You know what happens then? It's quiet. Moms, there's this thing called quiet. Like, if you got little kids, like, it'll come back one day. It will, but wait till like five. But he goes to this quiet place, and he went and had this internal quietness and external quietness. And it's this place of solitude, a solitary place. Solitude is just when you're alone. But it's not like isolation, because a lot of people are isolated and lonely and alone, and that's not healthy. Solitude, biblically, it's not when you're alone, but you're with God. You're with your own soul. You're not alone. You're in the presence of God. And so solitude is this practice of being with God. It's being with God through prayer, which is simply just talking to God. It's being with God through hearing from God. This thing, He gave us His word. It says it's living and active, sharper than a two-edged sword. It like gets into our bone and marrow. It says He speaks to us in our hearts through His Spirit. And so this solitude is this exposure to God. That this is like this door that we're invited into, that we begin to listen to God and combat all the different noises that we hear with what God says to do. We see it all the time with Jesus. He's constantly going to the desolate place, the quiet place, to be alone. In his years of ministry, and in Mark 1, what was it said that he was led by the Spirit into the wilderness. In our passage here, it said, he woke up early in the morning to what? To be alone with God. This is really helpful for me. I was on a retreat one time with the other staff at the church that we were part of up in Winter Park, and I was like, and I just said it in passing. I was like, hey, as long as I can beat the kids up, I'm cool. Right? They're like, that doesn't sound good. Right? No. And all I was saying, like, I'm not going to physically harm them, but if I can wake up before they do, yes. I get a little bit of solitude. I get a little bit of silence. It helps me start the day in a different way. Right? Because sometimes you walk up, like, you know, like in your ear, like, whoa, you wake up, they're like standing right there. You're like, whoa, that's not the way I needed to start this deal. Or again, you're waking up to a roommate or a friend or something like that. And so he woke up early to spend time with God. Now, there's some that are like kind of legalistic solitude people. Like, you have to spend this time with God early in the morning. And it's like, well, maybe you're not. My friend Ethan hates the morning. He like comes alive at night though. Right? And so you see that even in Mark 6. In Mark 6, again, Jesus is really busy. He's got the 72 and he sends them out and they're doing these great things in God's name and people are learning who Jesus is and they're wanting to follow him and they're doing that. And then in Mark 6, it says that they come back and it says that 6:30, it says the apostles returned to Jesus and told him all they had done and taught. And you know what Jesus says? He says, and he said to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest for a while. He calls them to come away, to rest, to have solitude, to have silence. And it says, and they went away in a boat to a desolate place by themselves. You see it over and over and again. So what happens then in that story? Jesus, they try to get to the desolate place and it says that the people found out where they were going and they beat them to the place. And so you know what they ended up doing? They ended up teaching all day. They ended up feeding them bread, the whole 5,000 loaves from a couple thing. That happens right when they were supposed to be in the desolate place. Moms were like, amen. Like, I tried to get this desolate place, and all of a sudden I need my Lunchables and I need my stuff. Right? And then, so what does Jesus do? It says that he sent everybody away at the end of the day, and he went all night and prayed. after his long day, the only time that he could get silence, the only time he could get solitude was what? Late at night. That's when he did it. In Luke 22, 9 times in the book of Luke, it says that he went to this desolate place. In Luke 22, at the Garden of Gethsemane, he's going to the cross. It says that he withdrew for them. He knelt down and prayed, and he said, "Father, not my will, but your will be done." Jesus removed himself. Jesus went to be on his own. John Mark Comer put it this way. He says, in Luke's gospel in particular, you can chart Jesus' life along 2 main access points. The busier and more in demand and famous Jesus became. So busier, more in demand, more well-known Jesus became, the more he withdrew to his quiet place to pray. Usually for us, it's the exact opposite. When we get over busy and life is hectic and people are vying for our time, the quiet place is the first thing to go rather than our first go-to. In our seasons of busyness, we need more time in the quiet place, not less. I know this is true for me. When things get busier, when things kind of get ramped up, when it's a busy season or things just don't go the way that I want, like kind of the first thing to go, like, okay, I don't need that. But it's just not true. If Jesus needed time with God, if Jesus made time to be with God, the busier he went, and let's remember, he's Jesus, he's God, we need that same time. It's arrogant to not think that we do. It's dangerous to not think that we do. Because when we don't take that time, when we don't just stop, when we don't just squelch out the noise, it leaves us being like distant from God. We become distant and disenchanted with ourselves. We get that anxiety ramps up. Right? Have you ever noticed that? When it gets busier and you're just like, okay, I'm going to double down and just work harder, what happens? You get more anxious. Right? It leads to exhaustion. We begin to turn to things that we know aren't healthy. Right? I'm so exhausted. What did Jesus do? Like, he's like, I'm going to go pray. Like, I'm going to binge watch Netflix. Right? That will help. Let me watch TV for 3 hours. That will fix all my problems. Right? We become easily tempted and ultimately we become unhealthy. Or we could go to the place where we have solitude, where we have silence. As Richard Foster said, we can go to a place where color regains its brightness, where truth regains its clarity, where reality loses its fog. It's in that time of solitude, it's in that time of silence that we are reminded that we're not God, that God's in control, that we're reminded of what matters. But this is going to be a battle. Look at verses 36 and 37 of chapter 1. It says that he went to the desolate place and there he prayed and says, and Simon, who's like his number one follower, and those who were with him searched for him and they found him. And they said to him, everyone is looking for you. So Jesus is trying to get this desolate time, this silent time, this solitude. And what happens? Everybody is looking for him. Like, who can relate to that? Right? Parents can relate to that. Employees, if you're an employee of somebody, guess what? They find you. I need you to come in. I need you to do this. Like, they're going to find you. Right? And now, like on social media, like you can't even hide from anybody. They're like, I literally know you have something in your phone that knows that I can get a hold of you right now. Like, you don't even get the excuse anymore that, like, no, I didn't get the phone call, man. He's like, no, it showed up on your missed calls. I'm sure you saw it. Like, oh, I didn't see you call. Yes, you did. You just ignored it. Right? Employees, they're going to find you. Employers, right? Boss, I need this. Boss, I need that. Boss, can you do this? I can't do this. That's what that means. That means you get to do that, right? I remember fishing one time with my brother-in-law. He helps work with his dad, and they run a company. And we were out on the boat fishing. He's like, literally, this is the only place they can't get a hold of me. And it was true. I was like, what do you like about fishing and all that stuff? He's like, they can't find me. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah, you should fish more. Right? Everybody's looking for us. It's a battle. But it's of vital importance. John 17, it says that we're to abide in him. And if we don't abide in him, we just begin to wither away. Henry Nouwen, he's kind of an internal, like, solitude guy. I have to read these guys that are like solitude and silence and prayer and Sabbath, because I'm terrible at all of it. And so when I read people, I'm like, oh yeah, I want to be like them. And so Henry Nouwen's one of those guys. He's like at one with his heart. Like he just has a good sense. But he says, without solitude, it is virtually impossible to live a spiritual life. We do not take the spiritual life seriously if we do not set aside some time to be with God and to listen to him. Right? It's of vital importance. Right? Is our physical health important? Yes. Is our vocational health important? Yes. Is our family health important? Yes. Is our study life important? Yes. But our spiritual health is the one that like makes all those things run. Like, how is our spiritual health? How is our emotional health? And so we're going to look at, like, okay, how do we do this? How do we have the courage? How do we have the strength? How do we have the discipline to carve this time out? To take some time every day? To take time throughout the day? To take time throughout the year? Just to step aside? How do we have it? And the key to it all, and the key that we see in Jesus, is that we need to know our identity, and we need to know our calling. At the core of it, it's a gospel issue. It's an issue of, hey, do we believe God? Do we trust God? You see, the gospel, the good news, the story of Christianity, it's all tied to this. Right? If you go back to the creation, God created everything, right? And Adam and Eve, they're in the garden, they're with God, they have everything they could ever want. They have a healthy relationship with one another, they have a healthy relationship with God. They're working the ground, they're taking care of the garden. It was good. And then what happened? They listened to an outside voice. They listened to outside noise. They said, your God's holding back from you. You can have more. You can do more. You can be happier. And they listened to this outside voice. And what happened? It led to noise. It led to chaos. It led to sin. It led to brokenness. It led to the reality of the world that we all find ourselves in. And that's what does Jesus do? Jesus comes in. He leaves everything. He leaves perfection. He leaves presence of God. He lives in the midst of the noise of this world. But did he listen to it? No. No, he listened to the voice of God. He listened to the calling of God. He obeyed God, right? And he goes to the cross. It says even in our passage, for this is why I came. He goes to the cross, and what does he do? He takes on the noise. He takes on the chaos of sin, and he silences it. He says, this no longer has rule over you. I'm going to take on the darkness. I'm going to take on the chaos. I'm going to take on the noise. Right? And then he silences it. He resurrects. He resurrects to new life. And he says, I'm going to take your noise. I'm going to give you my peace. I'm going to give you my rest. I'm going to give you my solitude. I'm going to give you my quiet. I'm going to give you my relationship with the Father. And it's only in that we can begin to rest. And you see this throughout Jesus' life. Jesus was driven by his identity. It's who, or more importantly, whose you are. in Mark 1, before he goes out into the desolate place, before he goes out into the wilderness, Jesus is baptized. And it says in Mark 1:11, he says, "And a voice came from heaven, and he says, 'You are my beloved Son. With you I am well pleased.'" Jesus knew his identity. He knew who he was. His primary identity was a son of God. Our primary identity as Christians is a son of God. It's being a daughter of God. It's not doing a bunch of stuff for God. It's being his son. It's being his daughter. And Jesus was sure of his identity. That's what allowed him to just do what he did. And so what's a son or a daughter need the most? They need time with the Father. Right? In the book, he talks about how does a child spell love? T-I-M-E. Right? And so we need it. We need this time with the Father so we can be reminded of our identity. We need to be reminded. And this is what God speaks over us if you read the scriptures, that you're loved, that you're accepted, that you don't have to listen to all these voices that says that you don't measure up. All the voices that replay all the shame and the condemnation and the brokenness and the loneliness and the anxiousness that we all feel. We don't have to listen to those voices anymore. We listen to the voice in solitude that says, "You're my beloved son. With you, I am well pleased." And it allows us to what? Stop. Jeremy has a great paradigm for discipleship. That we would be people who believe that we are who God says we are. And we're only reminded of who we are in Christ in this time of solitude. It's a constant reminder. This is who you are. You don't have to chase after all those things. You don't have to listen to all those voices that are telling you to do more and you don't measure up and you're going to be hurried in trying to listen to them. The second thing that Jesus knew was his calling. To not be hurried, to actually practice silence and solitude, we need to know what we're to be about. Solitude is a place to silence all the noise of what we're supposed to do. Do any of you else hear a lot of noise of things that you're supposed to be doing? Internally? Externally? Man, I can drive myself. In fact, I feel a lot healthier than I have in a long time. You know what the narrative in my heart, my mind is right now? You're not doing enough for the church. You need, if you did more, there would be more people here. You don't have to. It's not my church. Jesus says, "I will build my church and the gates of hell won't prevail." You may not care if it's a church. But what? Brian, that's your identity. You're the pastor. You're the church planter. No, I'm not. I am a son of God. And he's going to build his church. Get away from me, Satan. Right? What's your voice? What's the narrative that you're hearing that's calling you to do the things that aren't what we're called to do as sons and daughters of God? Jesus knew it. Look in verse 38 and 39. It says, "And they found him. Everybody was looking for you." And he said to them, what does he say? Everyone wants a piece of you, Jesus. You need to do more, Jesus. You need to keep going, Jesus. What does he say? I love him. I love Jesus. He says, "Let us go on to the next towns." He says, "No. Let us go on to the next town that I may preach there also, for that is why I came." He knew what he was called to do. He knew what he was called to be about. He didn't listen to all the voices of telling him all the things he should be doing. He wasn't driven by it all. He says, "And he went throughout all Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and casting out their demons." Jesus knew what he was called to. He said, I have a mission. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. He had a good news to proclaim. He had a cross to bear. He knew why he came. He knew what he was to be about. follower of Christ, we need to know what our calling is. What's our calling? Love God. Love people. Right? When we have silence, when we have solitude, it allows us to actually do that. The one guy put it, the fruit of solitude, the fruit of alone time of God, of being reminded of your identity, of being reminded of your calling. He says the fruit of solitude is increased sensitivity towards others and compassion towards others. How much better do you treat people when you're rested? When you've had time with the Father? When you've had a little bit of time alone? Right? Some of you wives know this. Sometimes Karina's like, you need to go for a run. It's a nice way of saying, like, you need some time away. Right? We don't have to chase after all these things that we think we're supposed to be doing. Solitude is the place where we're reminded of our identity, whose we are, and our calling, what we're to be about. The primary thing we're supposed to be about is loving God. How do you love God? Spend time with Him. What's most important? God. Right? Does that mean that you spend all your time with God? No. It prepares you to do everything else you're doing, to actually then go into the world to love people. And so how do we go? First is, we just need to create a plan. Like, you need a plan. Can your plan change? Yes. Our plans change all the time. Right? Karina had to wake up at 4:30 in December. So guess what that did? That changed our plan. Right? So when and where are you going to spend time with God? When's that going to be? Is it going to be in the morning? Is it going to be in the evening? Like, me, I'm not awesome in the evening. Guess what I do? I'm just like, I'm tired. I don't want to be grumpy with God. Right? But in the morning, I'm awake, man. I'm beating the kids up, right? I'm going with that. When and where? One said, what's that going to look like for you? We're all different. Create an environment to be attentive to and connected to God. And we're going to need brief times of this daily. So maybe for you, it's in the morning, right? Maybe for you, it's like, no, man, our house is like World War II trying to get out the door. Or my alarm's going off and I'm just trying to get to class. There's no silence going on in that. Figure it out. Right? Just take some time before you walk into work. One guy talked about he just got to work early. Something that's happened to me, so I really didn't like this at all because at night I get tired. But the dogs sleep more if we take them for a walk. So I'm like, all right, this is very self-serving, but I'm going to take the dogs for a walk so I can sleep better. Right? You know what my favorite thing is? I'm like, I'm going to go take the dogs for a walk. Jeremy, I got this from Jeremy. Jeremy just goes for a walk, right? He's alone, with God, able to think, out of the house, just walk around the complex, right? I love it now. I take the dogs for a walk. What's it going to be look like? So we need brief times of solitude throughout the day. And then what does it look like to have extended times? Like, hey, I'm going to take a half day here. I'm going to take a full day here. To what? To just get away, to detach, to be with God alone, to be reminded of what my identity and what my calling is. So we need to create a plan. That's going to be different for everybody. And then the next thing is, you just need to start. Just see that this is a big enough deal. If Jesus did it over and over and over and over again, it kind of matters. It's kind of important. So you just need to start. There's funny stories of, if you've heard of Charles Wesley, or they started the Methodist Church, but they talk about her mom had like a bunch of kids, and they said that there's two things that I've heard of her. Is one is that she had like 8 kids or 9 kids or something like that. She would just lock herself in her room for a half hour. She's like, I'm just locking my, like, whatever happens out there is going to happen. I'm getting my solitude time. The other thing that she did, she would stand in the middle of the kitchen and it would, like, crazy would be going on around her. She would just put her apron over her head and just stand there. So, parents, you need to know, if your kids think you're a little crazy, it's okay. They won't mess with you. She would just sit there and apron over her head. I need a quick 30 seconds, right? I need some solitude. Right? I was talking to Jared about this. I was reading about another guy, Gary Thomas, in Sacred Pathways. He talked about he learned that at parties where there's lots of people and stuff, he's just like, man, I couldn't handle it. Like, it was just too much for me. And he just learned that he would just have to break away in the middle of parties just to, I see 5 minutes. And then he could what? Re-engage. You need to figure out what you need, and we need to start. There's a devotional that I'm going through right now. It's called Emotionally Healthy Relationships. And literally, it's morning and evening thing. And it's the hardest thing in the world. It says, begin with 2 minutes of silence. That's it. Like, all right. So, I don't even ask you to begin with 2 minutes. Begin with a minute. I was listening to another podcast. Simon Sinek said that, like, set your goals crazy low. He's like, everyone's aside high goals. Like, I'm going to do 20 push-ups a day. He's like, no. Start with a goal of one push-up a day. He's like, you'll feel really good about yourself because you'll hit your goal and you'll go further. So don't say, oh, I'm gonna start having 20 minutes of quiet time in the morning. No, like, start with a minute. Start your day with a minute without grabbing your phone, without doing something, and just say, I'm going to say this minute, I'm going to be alone with God. Just start. And as we do, as we get away from people to be like Jesus and get with God, We begin to be a better person for people. We begin to know God. We're reminded of our identity. And so for us, as we go into the communion time, like, identify your noise. What's the noise that distracts you, that hurries you? What's that internal noise that you're trying to drown out? What's the external noise that you need to just shut off? And then what does it look like to develop a practice to hear his voice, to be reminded that you're my son, that you are my daughter, that on the cross, I died for that sin. I died for that shame. I died for that condemnation. I died from that pressure to do more. You're accepted. I'm calling you to love me and love others. Live out of that. Let's pray.